Welcome to the Kindle Chronicles, the Friday podcast all about your Kindle. I'm Len Edgerly, and this is episode 323 for Friday, October 10th, 2014. Greetings from Cambridge, Massachusetts, which is just 13 miles south of the headquarters of Spritz Technology, Inc. in Wakefield, Mass. That's where I visited this week with the two co-founders of Spritz. I've mentioned this innovative reading tool that Spritz is developing, in which words appear one after another around a focal point instead of being arranged in a line that you read from left to right, right to left, or some other direction depending on the language.
So you're at home in bed, you're probably going to read Kindle the way you normally read it. But if you're on the subway, you know, you might want to not have to scroll or flip or anything. You just turn it on and you read for 10 minutes, 15 minutes. You sort of work your way through your book.
That was Frank Waldman, Spritz CEO, and joining him in the interview that I did in person at their office was Mike Maurer, Chief Technology Officer. As you will no doubt hear, I am quite excited about this new reading technology, even as I am aware of how big a leap it is from what we're all used to. It sort of reminds me of my enthusiasm for e-books when I first discovered them via my Rocketbook nearly a decade before the arrival of the Kindle in 2007. Before we turn to my extended visit to Spritz's office, I want to check in with the other news this week, because we've had some notable stories to consider. First up is a report in the Wall Street Journal on Thursday, that's today as I'm recording, that Amazon plans to open a store on 34th Street in New York City across from the Empire State Building. That's an actual store, bricks and mortar. USA Today had the best lead on the report, which began, "Could this be Amazon's miracle on 34th Street?" A nice reference to the classic 1947 holiday movie about a nice old man employed by Macy's who claims to be the real Santa Claus. The Wall Street Journal reported that the store is set to open in time for the holiday shopping season and that it will function as a mini warehouse with limited inventory for same-day delivery within New York, product returns, and pickups of online orders. That to me sounds a lot like the retail space that Amazon plans to open and has announced at Purdue University as part of its outreach to students. But the Journal, quoting unnamed people familiar with the company's thinking, says Amazon may also consider using the space to showcase its own products such as Kindle e-readers, Fire Phone, and Fire TV. Amazon didn't answer questions about the report, and people familiar with the matter, another unnamed source of this story, cautioned that Amazon's plans might change and that the store is an experiment that might be deemed unsuccessful. You can read the full Wall Street Journal article if you Google Wall Street Journal Amazon Store New York. That's how I got there. Otherwise, you'll be stopped by the paywall. There is also a brief video report by Journal staffers, and here is an excerpt from the audio portion of that.
We're joined by Heard on the Street columnist Dan Gallagher. So it sounds like this first storefront is going to be more like a warehouse and less like a traditional retail space. What do we know so far?
I think very little. I mean, it's obviously going to be a touch point for consumers, and I think this is an early experiment by Amazon to see how this plays out. We're seeing Amazon work more and more to bring more of its infrastructure closer to big population centers. You know, it's trying to do things like same-day delivery, shorten the delivery times. I see this as sort of an experiment by them to see if this concept works, if they can have, you know, a place to facilitate exchanges, move some products, do pickups. This effort seems to combine several different efforts by Amazon into like one facility, more or less.
So what do you think the appeal of this is going to be for customers? Is it just an easier place to pick things up, faster shipping? What's in it for us?
I think it'll be hard to tell that until they actually get the place open and we see what exactly they're going to be offering there. But I can imagine for
so one, this is pretty tantalizing. I'm going to wait to find out if I can attend a grand opening, if there's going to be one of the store, until Amazon actually goes public with its plans. I'm always up for an Amtrak Acela trip to Penn Station from Boston here. So if the timing is right, you can be sure that I will bring you an up close and personal view of this pretty radical new initiative for a company that has gotten this far by strictly selling to customers via the internet. Also in news, I was delightfully stunned 5 days ago to read a calm but devastating rebuke of New York Times reporter David Streitfeld, penned by the newspaper's own public editor, that's kind of an ombudsman position. Margaret Sullivan said she had heard from, quote, many readers, unquote, complaining to her that, quote, the Times is demonizing Amazon and siding with publishers and those authors who support them in the negotiations showdown with the big publisher Hachette. You think? She urged more balanced coverage of the story, and this frankly restored my faith in a newspaper that I've pretty much respected and enjoyed reading all my life. Whether Mr. Streitfeld's reporting will be affected is, of course, unknown. As of today, Thursday, I could find no articles written by him about Amazon since Sullivan's critique, depending on his standing at the paper, and he is, after all, a Pulitzer Prize winner, not a vulnerable cub reporter. He may simply be able to dig in his heels and continue to portray Amazon as Snidely Whiplash and Hachette as the billionaire damsel tied to the train tracks. Streitfeld, in his Twitter stream, has made no mention of his visit to the journalistic woodshed. If you've been following this story, the Hachette negotiations, and been bothered, as I've been, by what seems to have been a pretty clear bias on Streitfeld's part against Amazon, I think you'll enjoy reading the Sullivan piece, and I'll have a link to it in the show notes at thekindlechronicles.com. At this point, there are 207 comments attached to her column. They make pretty interesting reading as well. In a quick scan of them, I find that a majority of them appear to support Sullivan's analysis. And finally, in news, if you ordered a Fire HDX 8.9-inch, the new big tablet, you will be receiving an added benefit courtesy of Jeff Bezos's purchase about a year ago of the Washington Post. Bloomberg's Brad Stone reported on October 6th that the Post will offer a free magazine-style tablet-friendly application on the new HDX 8.9, which is scheduled to begin shipping on October 21st. Citing unnamed people familiar with knowledge of the Post's plan, Stone reported that the new app will eventually be available for download on other devices with a monthly subscription fee. He said the effort has been nicknamed Project Rainbow within the Post. This report came just a day after a pretty remarkable column, also in the New York Times, by a reporter whom I admire, David Carr. The headline was, "The Washington Post Regains Its Place at the Table," and it detailed how the paper under Bezos' ownership is not just making smart digital moves, but is close to regaining the reputation for hard-hitting news coverage that it earned more than 40 years ago. Quote, "Did Mr. Bezos have some digital lightning in a bottle that altered the math of modern journalism?" Carr asked in his column. "Far from it," he continued, "but his willingness to finance hiring new employees, over 100 so far this year, has created an atmosphere of confidence and financial stability." As the Times undergoes another round of newsroom downsizing, David Carr's praise of the Post under Bezos strikes me as actually kind of a bit of courageous reporting on his part. The Post continues to cover big stories, even as its hoped-for recovery represents the big story in the future of newspapers in the digital age. For the tech tip, I'm going to stray from my usual focus on Kindle and Fire devices in order to let you know how you can try Spritz on an iOS device if you have one. The app which I used on my iPad mini is named ReadMe with an exclamation mark after me, and it cost $1.99 at the iTunes App Store. You purchase and download it from your iPad or iPhone. It's designed for both, and then you need to find an ebook in EPUB format to try reading. You won't be able to read any of your Kindle books or any iBooks that you might have purchased from Apple, and you'll hear more about that in the interview. But what you can do is navigate on your iOS device after you've downloaded ReadMe. Just go to Product Gutenberg, and that's gutenberg.org. Search for one of your favorite books, and when you get to the download options at Project Gutenberg, choose an EPUB file. That's E-P-U-B. Once it arrives on your device, tap on Open In, and then choose Open in ReadMe. That will launch the ReadMe app on your iPad or iPhone. And once you're looking at a page in your book through ReadMe, it'll first look like just a normal page of ebook text, but if you tap anywhere on the page, It will then bring up a circle that you move to wherever you want to start spritzing. Then you tap on the crosshairs to launch spritz. You will be able to set the words per minute, and there are rudimentary play, pause, and back buttons that take you back one sentence for navigation if you need to go back. Once you tap on play, you will see the book's text appear one word at a time. You may fairly quickly realize that you can follow the meaning of the words with surprising ease, depending on the speed that you choose, or you may sense that you've wandered way too far from the known world of books and reading, and will set this tool firmly aside. As you're going to hear in the interview, I have not yet experienced completely the easy flow of words via spritz that the co-founders assured me is possible, but I am intrigued enough to keep trying to master this radically new way of reading. If you try it on your iOS device, I'd love to hear your reaction. You can email me at podchronicles@gmail.com or leave a comment at the show notes at thekindlechronicles.com. And now it's time to head out to Wakefield, Massachusetts, and I want to give you my impressions of the Spritz office before playing the interview. It took about 45 minutes to get there from Cambridge because of heavy traffic on I-93 and I-95. When I reached the Lakeside Office Park, I did not immediately find my way to door 12. I was driving to all the various doors because there were at least 20 choices, and it took a while to actually find the one I was looking for. On entering, I found a sign directing me to the second floor of what may very well have been a large motel complex at one time, nicely reconfigured as modern office space. I found a glass door with Spritz Technology on it, a logo, and was welcomed by an assistant, Mary Ellen, who took me to a small conference room to wait for Frank Waldman and Mike Maurer. The room had a flip chart with nothing on it, just a full pad of blank pages, but fresh colored markers waiting in the tray, and the white walls in the room had no art of any kind. It looked like a nice work environment waiting for people to start working in it, I thought. Frank and Mike arrived and sat on the other side of a small conference table for our interview, and afterward they showed me a demo of some new Spritz capabilities on a MacBook Air that Frank brought with him. Mike, whose name is spelled M-A-I-K, is from Germany, so you'll be able to tell him from Frank in the conversation that we had. At one point, you will hear Mike mention a saccade, S-A-C-C-A-D-E, which is a movement of the eye from word to word while reading. One of the reasons that I've always loved attending South by Southwest Interactive in the past number of years in Austin is the energy that I take in from so many entrepreneurs and visionaries, and not all of whom are guaranteed success as they reach for a big goal. I felt the same energy in Wakefield this week, and I left impressed with the seriousness and passion of these co-founders. To be honest, I can't yet assert that this way of reading is an obvious next step in reading technology, but I think it's sure worth a try, and this startup team struck me as appealing and likable leaders for the effort. I do hope they receive serious attention at Amazon, also Apple, because I would like someday to have the option of spritzing my Kindle library on a smartwatch or my Fire Phone or some other wearable technology not yet invented. Why not? Amazon team members from Jeff Bezos on down, I think, pride themselves on being inventors with the fortitude and resources to make long bets on radical changes in the world of books and elsewhere. I left Wakefield thinking that these guys at Spritz may very well succeed in a similarly bold bid to revolutionize the way we read, at least some of the time.
I'm Frank Waldman. I'm CEO and co-founder of Spritz.
And I'm Mike Maurer. I'm also a co-founder and CTO of Spritz.
What got you started thinking about what led to Spritz?
When you read about the history of reading, you find out that it never changed, in fact. And so the publishing of text, of course, changed a lot over the last 4,000 years, but we never changed the reading. And so I was just wondering myself, how could we improve reading so that it fits better to these new situations that we have with mobile devices and so on?
Frank, when did you get involved?
Well, I got involved when I was on a trip for my previous company, and I was in Munich, and Mike said, "Hey, I've got something to show you. I want you to tell me what you think of it." And he didn't give me any instructions, just said, "Here, tap the screen and read." which I did, and I was blown away with how well it worked and how quickly I was able to adopt to reading the story. And so I thought, this is really something.
Now, at that point, when did you start thinking you would be creating a company and spreading this out to a much wider audience?
Well, I was thinking almost immediately. And luckily, Mike was of the same mindset. You know, in Germany, it's perhaps a little harder to start companies as compared to here in the U.S. I had started four previous companies, so I had a good idea about how to go about it. And all of my previous companies had innovative patented technologies. And so really the first thing for us was to check and see whether or not, you know, we'd be able to get a patent on Mike's ideas.
Well, let's go back now just to describe the idea itself. Perhaps, Mike, you could start with the optical recognition point, or ORP, and what is that and how does that play a role in the Spritz technology?
The optimal recognition point is the point where your eye tries to jump into a word to get the entire word as one unit. So you're not reading words character by character. You jump to this specific point, ideal, if you don't miss it, sometimes you miss it and then we have to go back. So you jump to this point and you read the whole word at once. And the general idea was not to, if we move the eye, we need a lot of real estate to represent text. And so the idea was to not to move the eye, but to move the text. And if you move the text, you have to think about where to center it. And the centering is not in the middle, which people did before us, or left aligned or right aligned or whatever. It's perfectly on this optimal recognition point, and so then your eyes do not have to move. And that is why you get into a streaming experience, because the eyes stand still and the words just flash to you.
Now, is that the part that you've patented, is the optical recognition point? Because I've seen other apps on the internet that just flash words one at a time, but is that the essence of why you're different?
Right. This is a very big difference. Normally, when you're reading, your eyes move over the text, you already look for the next few words while reading one word. So you're planning your next landing point. So where's the next optimal recognition point? And when you're just flashing one word after the other, your eye cannot do that. But if you center the words and not on the optimal recognition point but in the middle, then your eyes still have to move a little bit, but you cannot pre-plan where to land with your eye. And so therefore, this normal flashing of words can be very exhausting, and you cannot really speed it up because your eyes are in a permanent movement to the left and to the right. In normal reading, we mostly, at least if it's in English, we are reading from left to right. Now your eyes would need to move in both directions, and so therefore our technique works better.
So, Frank, and I'm sure you've gotten good explaining this in layman's terms, if someone picks up a device that is reading in Spritz, what do they see?
Well, what they'll first see is a display which has a guide that gets them to focus their eye in one place where we want them to look. And then they'll see a word where the character that's between those guides is colored red. And so it's that combination. It's just a focal device to tell you where to look, and then once it starts streaming, you keep your eye there. And so it's a combination of the two that really make it work so well.
How long does it take someone to learn how to read using Spritz?
Well, you know, if you're receptive, you can learn almost immediately. Within minutes, you'll increase your reading speed. You know, some people, of course, are slow to try new things, and so they'll actually be resistant. What we did find out, which is very interesting, is you can have a speed that's too slow. In other words, the words are coming at you so slowly it feels robotic. You have to speed it up until, for you, it starts streaming, like it has a cadence. You know, when we read with a cadence, and we want to have that same effect digitally. So you can then go, of course, too fast. So we call it the Goldilocks point. It's not too slow, not too fast, just right. And when you reach that point, it's almost like it's speaking to you. The display is speaking to you, and you're just watching it, just like you'd watch a movie. We have people that say, well, how long can you use Spritz? And I usually say, well, how long can you watch a movie? How long can you you know, do anything where you're fixed on a point on a screen.
Hmm.
It's the same kind of effect once you find that right point.
Now, I read somewhere in your information that it might be a good idea to read slightly faster than maybe your comfort zone. But tell me about that.
That's called sub-vocalizing your words. So, you know, I was taught to sound out my words as a kid. And as an adult, before Spritz, that's exactly what I would do. I when I read a sentence, I'd sound it in my brain. And that slowed me down. So I was probably reading 180 words a minute. With Spritz going at 350 or 400 words a minute, it's too fast for your brain to vocalize the word. And so you stop doing it. So now when I read conventionally, I read much faster.
Hmm. I tried it a fair amount of time. I think I was using the ReadMe app on the iPad, and I was reading Mark Twain's Innocents Abroad. I don't know if it was an anxiety, but there was a feeling of trying to keep up with a treadmill.
What speed were you reading?
350.
Okay.
I was getting it. It was coming in. But I wondered if I had spent an hour at it instead of a half an hour at it, if I would have sort of relaxed to the point where it was coming in without feeling like I was straining in my mind to read it.
Yeah.
Is that what happens?
That happens in the beginning. You know, it takes time for you to get comfortable with the, you know, really a different way to read. But the most important point about spritzing is, you know, you don't have to do it for sustained periods of time. In fact, we don't recommend it. Just like any activity, you should stop, get up, walk around, think about it, pause it, rewind it. And for this reason, we provide controls so that you're able to do just that. We have a lot of ideas on ways that we can improve the user experience. But again, ReadMe is not our app. We provide a software development kit, so the developer of ReadMe could decide how they wanted to do it. And, you know, there's lots of things you can do to improve the reading experience. In fact, that's a lot of what Mike's research is focused on.
Tell me about that, Mike.
Yeah, the normal spritzing is just delivering the content. So you need to interact like you interact with a book. When you're going to change the page, normally you look a little bit away and you get a pause. And this interaction is something that we also want to bring to Spritz. So what you see so far is the basic concept of Spritz, and there are a few buttons, but there is a lot that we can do on improving the user experience to make it more a real reading and interaction experience than just a consumption experience.
Well, one thing I discovered, this was toward the end of a long day yesterday, and I'm 64 years old. Sometimes when I'm reading, I doze off. And when I dozed off, Spritz kept going. So when I woke, startled myself awake, I had to go back a few sentences and see where I was. Now, the Fire Phone has four sensors that can tell where my eyes are.
Yeah.
Can you picture a Spritz app for the Fire Phone that would detect when the reader's eyes are closed and would wait for them?
Yeah, there are several phones, even all the Samsung phones already had this possibility that they could dim the display when you're not looking at the phone. So that was already in the S4. So this is a technology that's already provided by the hardware producers, that if you're standing in a subway and the noise appears somewhere around you, of course you will look up, you will look away, and you miss a few words, and until you are back, the sentence is gone. So this is something that is obviously a good combination with Spritz. As soon as your eye is going away, the Spritz stops, and when you look back, it will go back to the beginning of the sentence.
Hmm.
But these are all features that would be implemented in somebody's app, like ReadMe or ReadZ or some of the other ones that have come out that use our SDK.
Hmm. Well, Frank, why don't you sketch where you are now in sort of the growth cycle of the company?
Well, you know, we spent the better part of 2 years working on all of the intellectual property around this and filing patents and things. And it wasn't until March that we actually put up a website and became publicly known, because we launched on the Samsung Gear 2 watch with an app that was for reading email. And the world found us. So we had this tremendous amount of incoming requests for not only access to our software, but from media, from companies that were interested, from a lot of people that wanted to, you know, try it out. And unfortunately, we weren't ready then because we hadn't really developed this for everyone. We had focused on just doing it for Samsung. And so we had to prepare our SDKs. And so we spent a number of months building things and responding to all of the interest that we got. And we just started in June really having people develop and ourselves working with partners to integrate Spritz into their content. And in September, at the Samsung event for the Gear S Watch, we announced with four partners, apps to read content on the Gear S Watch with Spritz. So Financial Times, Thomson Reuters, AOL, Engadget, and Süddeutsche Zeitung, which is the most popular newspaper in Mike's part of Germany. So we had four partners, and you could really experience reading full news content on a watch.
How many people do you have on board now in terms of employees?
We're just over 20. Mm-hmm. So we're still small. We're still early stage, mm-hmm. and we're got a lot of things going on.
In the description of the iOS Spritz-enabled app, ReadMe, which is I've got on my iPad Mini, it says, note, you cannot purchase titles from iBooks or Kindle and read them with this app. They both, unfortunately, use their own proprietary formats for books. Do us a favor and send them a suggestion to integrate Spritz into their apps at iBooks and at Amazon Kindle. Do you have any sense of how many people took you up on that and sent tweets to Apple and Amazon to urge them to make it possible to read their books on Spritz?
Well, we don't. But if you go on to Twitter and you search on Spritz and Amazon or Spritz and Kindle, you'll see a lot of those. Mm. We've received a lot of emails from folks that have asked us if we could make it happen, and we'd love for it to happen.
Mm. What would it look like? If I've got, you know, thousands of Kindle books, I was an early adopter, and if it was possible, what would I be able to do?
Well, first of all, it would have to be integrated into the e-reader. So they would take our SDK and they would decide themselves how they'd like to integrate it into the user experience.
And probably not on the e-ink Kindles because you don't have the ability to do read. And it's also fairly slow.
No, actually, that's not true.
Really?
Well, first of all, yeah, you can't do red.
Yeah.
But you don't need red.
Okay.
You don't really... That, remember, was just a trick. All you need to do is focus the eye.
Okay.
So if you just have some guides to say, well, you know, this is where you look, you don't need the red character.
How about the speed?
The speed is fast enough. So, we actually got to test on the new Yota phone,
mm-hmm.
which has an e-ink display on the back.
Right, LCD one side, e-ink on the other.
That's right, and it works great on the e-ink display.
So it could work there and obviously on the Fire devices, the phone and the various tablets.
That's right.
Have you had a chance to meet with anybody at Amazon yet to talk about it?
We've had an initial meeting with Amazon, they decided that they were going to look into it,
mm-hmm.
which is a way of saying perhaps they're going to explore ways that they might do it or, you know, they have access to our SDK and so mm-hmm. we're hopeful that they'll decide to develop something.
And what kind of a response did you get from Apple? I assume you had the same approach to them.
Yeah, we had a similar response from Apple. A little different there in that, you know, they want to see how people read this way for months on end. You know, and so in the end, will people still, you know, use Spritz? And of course, we've only been out, for a number of months, so mm-hmm. we don't have that data. So we can't. I think what will happen is once we have enough folks like yourself who are interested in it and are experiencing it perhaps with some other app, that then you'll be the data mm-hmm. that they're looking for to confirm that they should include Spritz. Mm-hmm. And if they do, you know, it would be a feature, right? Not everyone is going to read with Spritz, and certainly not all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So you're at home in bed, you're probably going to read Kindle the way you normally read it. But if you're on the subway, you know, you might want to not have to scroll or flip or anything. You just turn it on and you read for 10 minutes, 15 minutes. You sort of work your way through your book. We've also heard people say, I'd like to read it conventionally, but when I get to a point in the book where it's a little boring for me, normally you'd start skimming. Mm. But instead, just flip it into turbo mode with Spritz. You'll power your way to the point, and when you get to a point where it's getting interesting again, flip back and you'll land right where you are now with at the end of the spritzing, and you can continue reading conventionally. So we see this is a technology where people are reading on the go. And, you know, so I have the Kindle app on my iPhone, and I read my books on my iPhone that way. I'd love, of course, to make that spritzable, and then I would just hold it at times when I have a few minutes, I'm waiting for you to show up. You know, I'll get through a few pages. That's what we think.
Based on your initial conversations, do you have any sense as to who's more likely to make their content spritzable, Amazon for the Kindle or Apple for the iBooks?
No clue.
No clue.
We're optimistic that both would do it.
Yeah.
And we think the first one to do it, you know, would address a growing population of readers who'd prefer to read it this way.
Yeah. Have you read a whole novel on Spritz?
I have, but not at once.
Okay.
You know, so you read a chapter at a time, like you would normally. You'd find breaks and you'd stop and come back to it later.
But you did, given that there were breaks, you read a whole book on
Spritz.
Yeah,
well, I had to because I'm associated with Spritz. But
yeah.
My first opportunity to do that was The 7 Habits of Highly Effective
Sure.
People on Oyster.
Mm-hmm.
So, and, you know, I do enjoy reading current books more so than reading Mark Twain and older, mm-hmm. you know, Gutenberg free books.
Yeah.
And so this is one that I've been dying to read anyway. So
you hadn't
I had
read
no
it.
Problem getting through it because I really wanted to
you
read it.
You read the whole thing. It's an average time at a session, 20 minutes or so? Or
yeah, no more.
Yeah.
No more. And, you know, because it's nonfiction, you know, I read it a little slower. So normally I would read about 450 words a minute. And that I was reading at 400.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, a slightly lower speed, and I could have even gone lower if you were going to give me a test. You know, I would make sure that, you know, I really, you know, absorbed everything that I needed.
Well, now, speaking of tests and thinking how I read as a student, and I still am a big, heavy highlighter when I read Kindle books and I do notes, do you see a time when you would be able to build in annotation tools in your Spritz reading? Maybe, Mike, that would be
Absolutely. So we are developing stuff like that. All this social reading is something really fascinating where you can share information with other people, and not just on fiction books. Also, if you're a student and you have to work with other people, absolutely, I can see that.
Well, how would you be spritzing and you would say maybe some voice controls and say pause, make a note, or what would the mechanics? It's hard for me to even imagine what the mechanics would look like, given that it's this kind of torrent of words coming.
Of course, gestures is one possibility. Swipes on your touchscreen are possibilities. You don't need all the time these buttons. But just imagine the situation where you have your normal text that you're reading, and you already have some annotations from other people. So what do you do normally? You pop them up and they cover large parts of the screen, or if you're in annotation mode in Microsoft Office, you know that, and then your screen shrinks down because you need at the right side, you need so much space for it. These things could be spritzed. So you are still in your text, you're coming to an annotation, and you just like pop up, spritz, there's a small reticle coming up, you spritz this one, and then you can continue reading. So these possibilities are there. So spritz is just a very compact possibility for reading. And there are different use cases where it makes sense to use this compactness of spritz and to integrate it into different use cases. So there's no reason why you should not have normal reading combined with spritz.
Yeah, in fact, on the README app, I thought that was pleasing to be able to go back and see the full page, so I kind of orient myself in the story, mm-hmm. and then switch to Spritz for a while, and then come back at the full page. And does that seem like a pretty common way to use Spritz?
Absolutely. Spritz is not replacing conventional reading. It's enhancing reading with new degrees of freedom into areas where conventional reading is not working that well. When we invented reading, and now back in history, when we started to write on cave walls, we didn't have smartwatch like yours on the requirements list. So therefore, why should it work that well on a smartwatch? Yeah, we didn't invent it for that. So I'm a big reader and I like reading, but of course it doesn't make sense to read the Spritz everywhere, like it doesn't make sense to read the conventional way everywhere. If you ever sat on a middle seat in a plane and had your big newspaper with you, you know what it means, so don't have space for reading.
So how would you focus on the types of reading situations that make the most sense for Spritz in general terms?
Mobile reading.
Yeah, in fact, wearable reading is our first.
Because your reading space is limited.
Yeah.
And you're moving.
Yeah. When it's shaking and you try to keep the line, you know the situation. But if you have... We have a mechanism to focus your eyes. So when you're staying in a subway and it's a little bit bumpy, it's easier to focus on one point than do all these saccades and always hit the ORP again.
Oh,
you're staying on the ORP.
I see what you're saying. So,
and it's also, remember that it's a total experience. You know, you're swiping, and when you're swiping, your finger's covering the display. So it's disrupting. Your total reading time is also navigating. With Spritz, there's no navigation, so you're always there.
Yeah, I suppose reading on a trampoline would be a good use case for Spritz.
If you have, for example, Google Glass on, perhaps.
Well, now I tried Google Glass for a while, and that's an obvious one. You did. Was there an ability for people to use Google Glass and read on Spritz?
We have a prototype. In fact, we actually call it a Kindle app, so you could select your book, tap it, and pick up where the bookmark is in that book, so you just continue reading where you left off. And it's quite an interesting experience. You realize you're reading with one eye.
Oh.
But it looks like both. Because of the way Google Glass does the mirroring, it looks like it's in the middle, but of course it's in front of this eye in a near-field display.
Well, I thought when I was using Google Glass, it looked like that it was up in the upper right.
Oh, yeah, it's up in the upper right, but you can fill that. You know, it depends on how you rotate the lens.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, so you position it to however you want, but it works.
Well, now you nicknamed it Kindle App. It can't be actually called Kindle App.
No, it can't be. It was just an example that,
you
know, people associate reading with Kindle, which is great for them.
What would your pitch to Amazon be? Say you had a chance to be speaking with Jeff Bezos or Russ Grandinetti or somebody, and you had 5 minutes to make your case that they really need to be proactive on getting this. What would you say? What would your argument be?
Well, you know, there's lots of reasons that, as Mike said, where there's opportunities to read where you can't currently read with Kindle. So that's an easy one. But even with Kindle, you know, there is, you know, people... And this is anecdotal, people have told us that they haven't time to finish their book, you know, and then they feel guilty about starting another book. They haven't even finished the one they did. And so people have told us, well, if I could just finish that book, I'd buy another one. And so for Jeff, I'd say you're going to sell more books if people can actually finish them. And they don't finish them in one go. It's because they're reading a couple pages here, a couple pages there. They're working their way through the book in all those little bits of free time that they have on the go. They're through the book. Now they're going to buy another one. And that's why we think it'd be great for Amazon.
That's similar to the transition, I think, at Amazon they have seen that when people move from reading books on paper to reading books on Kindle, they read more books. I think maybe they're reading faster. I don't know. So now you've got this new technology which sort of does for the Kindle platform what the Kindle platform did for paper.
Right. You'll read faster. You'll read more often. You'll get through the books, and you'll buy more.
Are there any platforms other than Google Glass and the watch that you see coming as places where this limited field of vision would be very suitable for Spritz? Things that haven't been, wearables that haven't been invented yet?
Well, there's a new wearable that will be announced coming soon. That's another form factor.
Can you give a clue? Or
no, unfortunately, I'd be stealing
their
thunder.
I'm trying to check my body. So where could I put something I could read? A little thing on my knee that when I'm looking down on the subway, I could read.
NicoQuity, yeah.
And this one is literally designed for spritzing.
Huh?
It's not from us.
I see.
But it uses our technology.
And how soon will it be out?
Well, they say they're going to announce on November 1st.
Cool.
So pretty soon.
Look forward to that. For each of you, we'll close with this. if you read a book you've been wanting to read, like the Covey book or a novel or mysteries, I don't know what you read, but just pleasure reading. I mean, you're working hard, I'm sure. How do you do that? What's your technology for just sitting back and reading a book for pleasure? We'll start with you, Mike.
I like real books. So I like to feel a book, of course. Yeah, and if it's a good story, there's nothing like a real book. But especially if it's a large book, I cannot take it everywhere. And so I would like to have a book in all these different devices, have the opportunity to switch between my hardcover book, an audiobook, and when I pause at the audiobook, I want to see the bookmark on my tablet so that I, every time over the day, I'm interacting with different devices. And if I would have the possibility to spread the story over all these devices, I would have the best reading experience. And when the day is over, at night, I'm in bed and I take my hardcover book, that would be the best experience. Because reading is, of course, more than just information consumption.
Right. Yeah, it's tactile. Well, and of course, you can sync the Audible book with the Kindle book the way you're talking about. It knows, what they call it, whisper sync for voice.
Right.
And
right.
That's a pretty nice feature.
And now sync it with Spritz, and that would be perfect. How often did you have to stop on at a book? And you would have liked to read on, but you don't have the time because you have to go to the train.
That's right.
You're walking to the train, you're standing there for 5 minutes, but you will pull out your book? No, you will not do. But if it's available on the watch, these 5 minutes are used. Yeah. People start with all this mobile movement, people start to fill the small gaps more and more with information consumption, also reading. And this is where Spritz can get into it.
How about you, Frank? How do you read for pleasure?
I read on my Kindle app on my iPhone, and I do that because, as I mentioned, I'm not so much about reading past books as I am about the latest books, and so what little time I have, I want it to be on those, and I find that's the easiest thing for me. Even if I have the hardback book, I get tired of holding the book. So I guess I'm a lazy reader. And so for me to just prop it up and read it. Now, if I had my choice of all things, it would be on glass, because then I'm totally hands-free. The book is there. I call it my reading glass. I just put it on. I'd read as much as I want and pop it off. I'd be laying down.
You'd be in your Barker lounger.
I would love
reading
it.
Glass.
So maybe someday.
Do you see this Spritz rewiring our brains, Mike?
Probably yes. Because reading is something we learn it. It's not something natural. We just learn it. And if you're born in another place in the world, perhaps your way of reading will be right to left, and you would say that's the right way to do it. So in fact, it will rewire your brain. And spritzing is a different form of reading. I'm absolutely sure it's not the only one, but it. After 40, 50 years that you did in your life reading, just to switch on a different way of reading is, of course, a big step, but you experience yourself. It works within minutes. So perhaps it's not really so much rewiring work to do, which is the good thing. Just a different way, yeah.
But it's just like people who are multilingual. You know, people that are multilingual tend to, you know, their brains are wired differently than people who don't, or people that can read music, you know, provides another dimension. Mm-hmm. This is another dimension.
In content, I want to let you know that I will be interviewing the author Peter Heller next week, so you might want to check out his two latest novels that we will be discussing. They are The Dog Stars, an apocalyptic tale set in Colorado, and The Painter, also set in Colorado, where the protagonist is a talented fine art painter whose dark impulses sometimes overtake him with violent results. That's it for this week. I'm finishing up early on Thursday night because tomorrow Darlene, the Yorkie, Claire, and I will return to Ocean Park, Maine for another off-season sojourn. Claire and I will be hanging out there while Darlene commutes to a quilting workshop in Harpswell, Maine, north of Portland. She's going to be working on a stunning new quilt based on a photo that I took of Claire looking out the driver's window of her old Volvo as if she'd just been pulled over by the police. It looks as if I'm going to have a good amount of time to learn the ins and outs of the new Kindle Voyage e-reader next week, leading up to lifting of an embargo on reviews. So if you are subscribed to my free Kindle Chronicles email newsletter, you will be the first to be notified when my video review of the Voyage goes up sometime later next week. You can subscribe by entering your name and email at the sign-up box, which you'll find at the right column at thekindlechronicles.com. This is Len Edgerly in Cambridge, Massachusetts for the Kindle Chronicles. I really appreciate your taking the time to listen to my podcast. Have a great day. Bye.